WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. On day two of our spring membership drive, we hope you will all help us out with a little financial support at some time during the year, and maybe for some of you it'll be today. Now, today is the first anniversary of the Mueller investigation. Rod Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller special counsel 1 year ago today after Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself from the case. And talk about anniversary gifts to the American people. It has been some 24 hours for newly public developments in the Russia investigation and where it intersects with the Michael Cohen, Donald Trump, Stormy Daniels investigation. There are at least six new things to report. Number one, there is journalist Ronan Farrow's story in The New Yorker about some missing bank records pertaining to Michael Cohen, records called suspicious activity reports that basically never go missing except in this case. Number two, Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, says Mueller has informed him that Mueller accepts the notion that he cannot indict a sitting president and will not seek to indict Donald Trump, but he can issue a report. Development number three, there is Donald Trump filing, as required, his 2017 financial disclosure statements, which include a six-figure reimbursement to Michael Cohen for expenses that appear to be his hush money payment to Stormy Daniels just before the election. But Trump did not disclose the debt to Michael Cohen when he filed his 2016 disclosure form, though he already owed it by then. As a result of this discrepancy that looks like a cover-up potentially, the head of the Government Ethics Office has now referred the discrepancy to Rod Rosenstein at the Justice Department, saying there might be a criminal violation here by the president, not just an ethical one. Development number four, the report from the Senate Intelligence Committee, completely bipartisan, concluding that yes, Russia did interfere in the election to help Donald Trump. Now, that bipartisan conclusion refutes and really puts to shame the House Intelligence Committee report by Republicans only that found somehow that Russia was not trying to help Trump. Development number five, the big document dump from the Senate Judiciary Committee about the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting between Don Jr. and Jared and Manafort and some Russians connected to Putin, documents in which it starts to appear that Don Jr. told Don Sr. about the meeting because Don Jr. only called one blocked number after the meeting, and his father is the one in those circles who uses a blocked number. Also in the documents, an exchange between a Democratic counsel and Don Jr. in closed-door testimony that confirms that Don Jr. was actively trying to collude with the Russian government. Referring to Don Jr.'s email to his Russia contact that said, "I love it," counsel asked, "What was the it that you loved in that email?" Don Jr., potential information about an opponent. Counsel, potential incriminating information on Hillary Clinton. Don Jr., yes. Counsel, and what about the thing that says, "It is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Did you also love that?" Don Jr., "I don't know. I don't recall." Counsel, "Did you understand that that would be problematic?" Don Jr., "I didn't think that listening to someone with information relevant to the fitness and character of a presidential candidate would be an issue. No." So, okay then. Thank you, Senate Judiciary Committee, for clarifying that. And finally, development number six, The New York Times reported yesterday afternoon that four members of the Trump campaign team were under FBI investigation before the election because of evidence that they were working for Russia. Manafort, Flynn, Carter Page, and George Papadopoulos. Three of them have since been charged with crimes, and two of them have already pleaded guilty. Significantly, these investigations were known by James Comey before the election, but not disclosed to the American people so as not to influence an election, even as he did disclose his reopening of the Clinton email investigation at the time. The Times reveals, by the way, that that secret FBI investigation into Trump world was named Crossfire Hurricane after this lyric from a Rolling Stones song, "I Was Born in a Crossfire Hurricane." That one, that's one of the Stones' biggest hits, Jumping Jack Flash from 1968. And James Comey certainly did bear himself into a crossfire hurricane, with both Clinton and Trump world arguing Comey was biased against them. The Times article certainly puts the lie to one of those narratives. You can figure out which one. With me now, David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones, and Michael Isikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News. They are co-authors of Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war in America and the election of Donald Trump. Hi, Michael. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi there. Great to be with you.
So maybe the most serious thing for Trump in the last day out of all of those six things is the discrepancy between his 2016 and 2017 financial disclosure forms and the ethics chief referring it to the Justice Department for any criminal implications. Can one of you explain to our listeners more about what these disclosures are and what the criminal implications could be?
Sure. If you're a candidate for president, or if you should be lucky enough to become president, you have to file what's called a financial disclosure form, which lists, you know, your income, your debts, your obligations, your, you know, what you own. But these forms are very vague in certain ways. You have to say the category of a debt. So a debt might be in the category of over $25 million, which means it could be $25 million or $500 million. So it gives us sort of a look at some of Donald Trump's finances, but not a clear picture of his finances. And there have been aspects about his finances that have been very, very puzzling to experts, and they're not explained by these disclosure forms. But on these forms, you have to say, what is your debt? What obligations, what loans do you have outstanding? And we now know that in 2016, Michael Cohen paid off Stormy Daniels $130,000. And according to Rudy Giuliani, we were told recently that even though Trump said he knew nothing about this, Trump had paid back that debt, had reimbursed Michael Cohen. So that more or less means that on the form that Donald Trump filed last year in 2017, which would have covered 2016, he should have put on the form, I have a debt of over $100,000 to Michael Cohen. Yeah. You don't have to say why, but it should have been on the form.
Although it is possible, isn't it, that Trump did not know about Michael Cohen's payment to Stormy Daniels until after the 2016 filing?
Possibly, but remember, he filed that in 2017, and now we see on the current form covering 2017 that he now lists that debt being paid off in 2017. Now, part of the issue is we don't know exactly when he knew about this. He said a few weeks ago on Air Force One, he knew nothing about this. Ask Michael Cohen. Remember that famous videotape that was played?
Yep.
Well, he certainly knew in 2017 that he had paid back this debt. So that...
Right. So something is amiss there, and we'll see.
Lie. And the question is whether he intentionally left it off of last year's return. If he did that, it's a crime to lie on these forms if you do it intentionally.
Right. So,
that's what the issue is.
So there's a brand new storyline opened up in the Justice Department. We'll see what Rod Rosenstein does with that referral. Michael Isikoff, what do you make of Giuliani's claim that Mueller told him he will not indict Trump?
Yeah, well, you know, in one sense, it's not really a surprise because people who have been studying this for some time and talking about it have noted that there are, you know, there is outstanding Justice Department legal opinions that a sitting president cannot be indicted. And Robert Mueller is a Justice Department employee. It is to have been expected that Mueller would have found that to be a block right. to him indicting the president. What was surprising to me about the exchange, other than the fact that I did love the sort of delicious detail that this was first volunteered by a deputy at the meeting, and Mueller looked crossly at the deputy for offering up this information, although it was then confirmed later in a phone call that Mueller felt bound by Justice Department by the Justice Department legal opinion. But the new detail, I thought, was the emphasis on a report, because it's always been unclear to me how much Mueller views his job as to write a report. The report only goes to Rod Rosenstein. What Rod Rosenstein wants to do with it after getting it is entirely up to him. But some of us thought that Mueller would view his brief very narrowly as bringing criminal cases, and that's it. And if he doesn't have an indictment to bring, he'll write a declension memo that will go to Rosenstein without much detail. The idea that he views his role possibly more expansively to put all he knows and all he learns in a report, I found interesting right. and potentially significant.
And I think it makes the sort of headline on that story less important, that even if it's true that Mueller believes that he can't indict a sitting president, it still means that Mueller can issue a report stating a conclusion that Trump acted criminally, and then if Rosenstein makes it public, Congress can consider whether it's impeachable stuff. So the outcome is sort of the same.
Although I would doubt he would say the president acted criminally, because he could say that, but more likely he would do the kind of report independent counsels used to do, which is sort of a straight recitation of facts that they have learned. The tricky part is, what does he do with grand jury information, and does he get some kind of ruling from the court that would allow him to disclose mm-hmm. what people told him in the grand jury?
David, what do you make of the Ronan Farrow New Yorker story about suspicious financial activity reports on Michael Cohen going missing? First, what is a suspicious activity report?
Well, most Americans probably don't know this and probably don't have reason to worry about this, but banks are required, if they see activity in a bank account that they think might be suspicious, say a large movement of cash or a payment for something they can't relate to services rendered or goods sold, to send in what's called an SAR, a suspicious activities report. And it goes to a database run by, I believe it's Treasury Department, by the federal government. And it doesn't mean a crime was committed. It's there for other investigators to look at, to see, to find patterns. They're looking for money launderers or corruption. And it was this suspicious activities report that led to the stories a week or so back about the activity in Michael Cohen's bank account, that he was being paid by all sorts of corporations, some in the United States, some out of the United States, including one, which we wrote about a lot at Mother Jones, that was connected to a Russian oligarch named Viktor Vekselberg. So one question was, how did Michael Avenatti, who first produced this information, get it? And he was on the air talking about suspicious activities reports, giving a big clue. And then last night, Ronan Farrow in The New Yorker interviewed an anonymous source who he did not identify, who claims to work in law enforcement who had access to this suspicious activities report about Michael Cohen, and he admitted that he had leaked this material. And he says that there were other reports on the in the system that seemed to be there, but that he could not access. And he raised the issue of whether they've been removed or suppressed. Other experts have come forward now to say that that may not be so likely, but it does raise an issue of whether anybody was fiddling with these records. But more importantly, the big issue is it seems there is more details to come on what Michael Cohen was doing with his bank accounts, where the what money came in, and more importantly, where the money went to, and we just go to him or some other places. So a whole nother big subject for either Robert Mueller, if he doesn't do it, for the Southern District of New York to be looking into.
My guests are David Korn and Michael Isikoff, co-authors of the book Russian Roulette, about Russian meddling in the 2016 election of Donald Trump. And there are all these developments in the Russia investigation and Michael Cohen investigation in the last day on this, what happens to be the first anniversary of the appointment of Robert Mueller. David, it looks like you actually got the Times to issue a correction to their big story today, which is, by the way, listeners, a fascinating read and really informative about how this investigation got off the ground in the first place during the summer of 2016. And David, it looks like you got them to issue a correction to reflect that you reported before the election that the FBI was interested in the Steele dossier.
Yes, in their story, they had made a big point of the fact that nobody had, no media organization had reported on the existence of the Steele memos or the fact that the FBI had been interested in them prior to the election. When indeed, 9 days before the election, I and Mother Jones reported on the existence of the memos. We didn't identify Steele by name, but said that he was cooperating with the FBI and the FBI was interested in these reports. To me, it's interesting because the same day that that story came out, and Mike and I describe a lot of this in our book, Russian Roulette, the New York Times put out a story, this is October 31st, 2016, basically saying the FBI has found no conclusive links between Trump and Russia. And what a lot of people think is that that story kind of killed public interest in this area, and the story was, the headline was premature. The FBI had just started working on this, had already gotten pretty far down the road, and but was telling the FBI, you know, we haven't found anything definitive yet. And the New York Times kind of took that information and made a big deal out of it rather than focusing on what was put in the 10th paragraph of the story, that the FBI had an extensive investigation that was ongoing into contacts between people associated with the Trump campaign and Russians. So they really kind of lowballed it. It's a big blemish, I think, for the Times. And yesterday's story, you know, despite what they wrote, you know, how they handled what I wrote, seemed to be a half step for the Times in correcting its own record on this.
I should point out that some of the language in the Times story is strikingly similar to what we wrote in Russian Roulette, particularly about that story. And as long as we're piling on the Times here, they seem to omit the fact that I and Yahoo News had reported the fact that there was an FBI investigation into at least one member of the Trump campaign, and that was Carter Page, back in September. They seem to have omitted that in the story as well.
We just have 2 minutes left. One observation and one question. The observation is, when you take the fact that the FBI had reason to suspect Trump campaign officials of working for Russia, but Comey didn't reveal it, and add to that the fact that the public didn't know Michael Cohen had just paid hush money to Stormy Daniels to help Trump get elected, and the public didn't know Don Jr. had solicited dirt on Clinton from Putin World, it means that voters did not know these bombshell truths, while all they thought was new in the final 10 days of the campaign was that Comey was looking at Anthony Weiner's computer for stuff from Hillary Clinton. I mean, that is some set of disclosures and non-disclosures for the people of Pennsylvania, right. Michigan, and Wisconsin, right?
What is striking about that time story is the degree to which the FBI went to keep its investigation secret, to the point that they weren't doing certain interviews that they thought would leak out, that would become known. And look, that's the way they should have done it. It was a highly sensitive counterintelligence investigation. They were keenly aware that disclosure of this probe would affect the election, and they were bending over backwards to make sure it didn't. In one sense, they can be applauded for that. The real blame they get is for Comey talking about writing the last minute letter,
right.
About
and
the
it's
Hillary
pretty
Clinton
cool.
probe.
I think
if anything, that does show that the sort of Fox News narrative that there was a plot to prevent Donald Trump from becoming president really doesn't stand
up. Not hardly. We just have 30 seconds. David, this is the 1-year anniversary of Mueller's appointment. Didn't Trump say he would announce by today whether he will voluntarily be interviewed by Mueller's team?
You know, I can't keep track of everything that Donald Trump has said, and I think an interview with Mueller wouldn't help Mueller one way or the other, because Trump is the most unreliable witness there is in almost anything. I'll just say that, you know, 1 year is not a long time in a complicated investigation. Often they go on for many more years than this. And it is, you know, as you just, you know, to echo your point, Brian, it is still stunning to me that America did go to the polls in 2016, and we still, don't know now even all that was going on beforehand that might have been very important to a large number of voters.
Well, this 1-year anniversary of Mueller's appointment, filled with at least those 6 striking developments in the last 24 hours. David Korn and Michael Isikoff are co-authors of Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war on America and the election of Donald Trump. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.